What's good, everybody? This episode of the podcast is sponsored by DistroKid. They are the go-to for digital music distribution and the easiest way for musicians to get your music onto Spotify, iTunes, Amazon, TikTok, YouTube, and more. They offer unlimited uploads, and artists keep 100% of their earnings in stores 10 to 20 times faster than any other distributor. Fastest payouts. They help out with automatic splits, cover song clearance, and all kinds of other amazing tools and templates to help you get the most visibility for your releases. I dig this company and appreciate their business model that offers more features than any other distributor at the most affordable price possible for solo musicians, bands, DJs, studio artists, and any other creators that are producing music in their home, and they also offer label services as well. They've got three different tiers to offer creators that start as low as $22.99 a year. That's just $1.92 a month, and even their top tier is just $7.50 per month. And the best part about DistroKid sponsoring the podcast is that they are offering Dan Cable Presents listeners and viewers 30% off your first year membership with DistroKid, making their already affordable prices even cheaper for you. Check out the link in the episode notes. I will also put it in my Instagram bio in the link tree. That link will give you 30% off that first year of service. Super stoked to have DistroKid sponsoring the podcast and cannot thank them enough for their longtime support of this thing. This episode of the podcast is also sponsored by Puff Coffee. Puff is one of my favorite coffee shops in Portland, Oregon. They've got a location off 28th and Stark in Southeast. Their coffee is delicious and everyone that works there is always super friendly. I had the pleasure of staying in their neighborhood for a month or so, and it was just a real treat to have this as my neighborhood coffee shop for a bit. And now I find myself going out of my way to get over there and get some coffee. Puff Coffee was started by the founder of Stumptown Coffee, and they are making small batch coffee roasted daily here in Portland. Their mission: to find, roast, and deliver the most delicious coffees anywhere. Their small batch process means that they get to keep things interesting with experimental blends and single origin gems while always keeping the classics on deck. They've got a variety of beans to choose from, and if you're not in the Portland area, you can order their small batch coffee straight to your home through their website. And you can use the coupon code DANCABLE, all one word, for 20% off a coffee subscription. Links for Puff Coffee will be in the episode notes. Big thanks to Puff for supporting the show and for their amazing small batch coffee. Now let's get into the episode.
Look down at the
What is happening, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the Dan Cable Presents podcast. Thank you for tuning into the program once again. If this is your first time listening, thanks for checking out the show. You can find fresh episodes coming at you every Tuesday. And if you want to help support this thing in a free way, you can do so by clicking subscribe on iTunes, clicking write a review, giving the podcast 5 stars if you feel like it is deserving of so. And that will help propel this thing into the tops of those iTunes charts, which will give it more visibility on the national and international levels, helping strangers find the podcast and just a great way to contribute to the growth and sustainability of this thing. Appreciate the hell out of all the folks that have already taken the time to do so. If you're not listening on Apple, just hit like, follow, subscribe wherever you are listening from. Give it 5 stars on Spotify. If you're watching on YouTube, hit subscribe there. And check out the monthly playlist that I have been dropping every first of the month. Those are pretty spread out genre-wise. Links for those are in the episode notes. Just a snapshot of what I'm listening to throughout the month. Hope everybody is doing well out there. Stoked to get in to episode 409 of the podcast with Portland born and raised rapper Milk is on the show this week. I've been following this dude since 2021 when he put out this Tiger's Milk project with producer Calvin Valentine, who is a former guest of the podcast, if you want to go back and check out an old one. But I just love Milk's records. Everything he's put out in the last few years has just been so good and just so impressed by his output and just really enjoyed our hang. This is the first time that we've really gotten to talk with one another. We had met in passing at some shows, but have never really had the time to chat. So really appreciated this conversation and getting to dive into his mind and just kind of his creative process and where he's coming from. If you're new to Milk and you dig the music, you've got a lot to catch up on. This dude has he's put out like 6 or 7 records, I think, since 2021, which is absolutely crazy. And especially for it's not really just about the quantity. I think it's really about the quality here is also a part of the thing that makes it so impressive. So I'll put all the links in the episode notes so you can keep up with Milk. He will be out on tour this summer, so check in with those dates if you want to see the fish that saved Portland live in a city near you. And with that, we are going to get into this thing, and we are going to play one of my favorite tracks from Milk, and it is from the record I just referenced, The Fish That Saved Portland. You can check this thing out wherever you stream music, and this is a record that Milk did with Televangel, and we get into kind of that relationship in this conversation as well. And this one is called Plus Sized Model. Let's do the damn thing.
Used to practice my toy tag on a pizza box. I look like Ethan Hawke and Beef and Brock's. I'm a grown man, dog. You can keep the Crocs. You can keep the beats. I'd rather beat the block. I'm up top. I can see the Mona from Nana Roof. They call me propaganda proof. I am the truth. If we broke, we gotta gamble lure. Till our pockets chunky like Campbell's soup. Hold on, let me adjust my nozzle. Fly but my gut wide, plus size model. That Jada Kiss clip, please don't touch my bottle. 2-day bender, call me Bug Eye Blanco. Look like the white Beetlejuice from Howard Stern. Switch from flour to powder when the hours turn. Laughing like when will these cowards learn. Inside job, Bush watching the towers burn. First the fat boys break up, and every day I wake up, someone got a problem with Milk. These new dudes make up, I catch them on the way of what they cry about, who's on the pill. First the fat boys break up, and every day I wake up, someone got a problem with Milk. These new dudes make up,
all right,
I catch
them
on the way of what they cry about.
You ready to do it?
I'm ready.
All right, man. I'm excited to have you here. I've been following your music for a while now. I guess since you put out that Tiger's Milk project with Calvin Valentine is when you first really got on my radar, and I understand that's right around the time that you started putting music out heavy after maybe taking a little break.
Yeah
got busy during the pandemic.
Yep.
But yeah, been listening to your music a lot, and just love your style and delivery and your lyrics, and just really impressed with your output. I guess over these last few years, you just seem like you put out a new project every other day. But yeah, man, talk to me about just your, what are your early memories of music? Like either maybe like falling in love with it as a listener, or like as a participant as a creative.
Yeah. I think like I'm old now, so like I was listening I was like I probably really got into music like watching like music videos, you know, like fuck, like MTV and BET and shit like that.
Absolutely.
And we're okay to,
you can let it fly.
Okay. I gotta stop, actually. When I listen back on other podcasts, I sound like an idiot by having but anyway, I think I was always, I have two older brothers, and they were into all types of music, especially into rap.
Okay.
And so rap was just always like the thing in my house that was playing. Like everybody was listening to rap in the neighborhood. Like that was just the genre, really, that I grew up in.
What were like the records that were maybe like circulating around that time that really stuck in your brain?
Dang. Like the first thing I remember was my brother playing. See, I'm old, but my
you're not gonna outdate me, though. I promise you, I probably
playing,
have a couple years.
It was written by Nas.
Okay,
like Jay-Z Volume Hard Hard Knock Life, Jay-Z Volume 2. A lot of Wu-Tang was played. A lot of Bay Area, like E-40 and like Spice One and like Be Legit, The Click. Like a bunch of Bay stuff, but okay. Also a lot of East Coast stuff, especially my older brother Thomas loves East Coast, like loved East Coast rap, like Raekwon and Ghost and all that. So like, yeah. And then of course, like, I liked Will Smith when I was I liked what was that album with
Big Willie Style?
Big Willie Style, yeah, yeah. That was cracking in my I was, my brothers hated it, but I was blasted just the two of us.
Bro, that shit would play at like my junior high dances.
Yeah, there you go. Nice. Miami. Getting jiggy with it.
The Wild Wild West.
Yeah. Oh, Wild Wild West is big too. Damn, Will Smith used to be so cool.
Had some bangers.
He used to be so cool. He's so uncool now. But
it was pretty wide then. Though, like, even if it was like very rap centric, it was coming from like all aspects, from like maybe the stuff that was happening pop wise on the radio to like East Coast stuff and maybe some underground stuff as well.
Yeah, and so those are like my earliest like memories. I really didn't really listen to any other genre of music till I got to be like 21, 22. Really? I was just kind of strictly a hip hop. I mean, I liked other stuff, but I didn't like. I had like a deep, like nerd out for rap, you know, since a very early age. I used to go to like lyric websites at the library at school to like print out the lyrics to like rappers I liked and like look at them, you know what I mean? Like,
just a geek for it.
Yeah, yeah, and that was like early age too. But so I started writing rhymes and rapping when I was like 11. So that would have been like in the year 2002. So, okay. So I've been rapping like, a long time.
Was it, do you think it was just because that was like the music that was around you, or like, why do you think you gravitated towards rap music and writing lyrics from an early age?
I think, because it was always around me. I was also a big hooper when I was little and into high school, but like basketball and rap at the time especially just went so hand in hand.
Yeah.
And like being at the park, the older homies would come like park their cars and like blast rap music while we would hoop out of their cars. And then like, it was just, I think it was, because it was around me. The older I get, the more I realize I like it is because I don't really see myself as much of a musician, really. I always kind of like see myself as like a writer.
Okay.
Like, I don't think I'm actually not very musical. I don't really know anything about music, really. Like, you know, as far as like chord progressions and stuff like that and anything like that.
That's cool. I've been doing a music podcast for nearly a decade now, and I also don't know any music theory or anything. I just know I like music a lot.
Yeah. So like I always realize I think I just really like the writing aspect. It's my favorite part of everything I do, is just sitting down and like writing rhymes. It's like the funnest part of it to me, you know?
Do you feel like you are always, because you came to like writing through rap music, do you feel like you are always kind of like, your lens for life is through bars almost? Like, you're always thinking about how this observation you have can work into a bar?
Yeah, it messes up my life, but yeah, for sure. Like any weird detail I see or I see it. Yeah. It's like, Neo at the end of the Matrix when he starts seeing the code in real life. That's like me in bars right there.
What do you think you like about that? Like processing the world in that way?
I don't know. I just really like this shit. Like, I really like finding a weird thing to rhyme. I really like just saying the illest shit I could say. I just like it. Like, it's just like, it's like one of the only things that comes like easy to me, you know what I mean? Like, it's like, it's just like, you kind of just pick it out of thin air, and it's just like, it's the only thing that's like, it's like so natural and in me that it's like, even if I was like, there's like a 5-year period of time where I really wasn't doing music, like recording or putting it out or anything. But even during that time, it was still just like rhymes all day in my head.
Still be writing things down periodically. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. And even if I don't try to write, I'm writing, you know what I mean? Like, it's just, yeah. Yeah.
So it's not like, there's not necessarily like some practice around it, like where you're like, I sit down and I write every day. It's just like, it's just in you and flowing through you. Yeah. It's just like kind of something you have to do. Almost.
Yeah, kind of. And you know, a lot of people think like I got other homies that make music and shit, and they be asking like, do I write every day? Or it's like, no, I don't even write, like technically sit down and write every day, but it's just like, it's always in my brain. And then so like, you know, sometimes you'll have a session where like a couple other, like, you know, you're with the homies and you're making a song. I'm writing a verse in like 5 minutes. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, it's like, cause it's already been processed in my head. You know what I mean? Like, it's already there. It's always already there. You know what I mean? Like, so it's, yeah, it's just, yeah, it's really it's like the one thing that just comes supernatural to me. I don't, yeah.
So it's not necessarily that you're even like, you're writing this thing in 5 minutes. It's like been permeating like inside of you and processing, even if it's like almost subconsciously, it's like, just always kind of happening.
It's always happening. Yeah. For sure. Yeah. Yeah. No, it's, and I just, you know, being able to write, it's just the reason why it took people to start taking notice of me is because I think I just had to live a little more life, you know, like when I was little, younger and rapping, it's just like what I didn't have, maybe all the life experiences and things I needed. And then like when I finally came back to this thing, I had lived a lot of life. So it's like, you know, I think that's part of it. It's like my writing just reflects my life and what I see and what I'm doing and what I'm hearing so much that I just needed all this extra stuff, you know what
I
mean?
Absolutely. Yeah. It's easier when you have a little bit more of that like life experience.
Yeah, and you feel can like just maybe draw on more stuff.
Yeah. You like develop a voice in like having something to actually say.
Exactly. And sorry, I'm just trying to turn this on airplane.
Oh, you're good, dude. It's not that serious. We're not on a late night show.
But yeah. And I just love, if I didn't rap, I would write in some other capacity, I'm sure. Like, I don't know what, in what way or what, but that's why I always say I see myself more as like a writer than a musician.
Have you explored that much, like outside of writing bars? Like, are you ever doing some sort of creative writing or like just, yeah, a little stream of consciousness type things?
I've had like a couple poems published, but like that was because like of weird circumstances. For the most part, like I haven't really, I really would like to write like some short stories, like kind of like based on stuff, but you know, but like based on my life, but fictionalized and aspects, but I haven't really got to it yet because I've just been trying to do this so hard lately, but I will later in life probably want to do that. Yeah, my dad's a writer.
Okay.
My dad worked for the Oregonian for like 30 years as a journalist.
Okay.
And an art critic.
So like the times that you have written like poems, do you feel like that is a completely different mindset than when you're writing raps?
I think writing the poems is easier for me because I don't have to rhyme if I don't want to.
Yeah.
But honestly, I've gotten to my rap to a place where it's like, it is similar to like what I was writing in my poetry, kind of like somehow, some way, where it's just my poems really weird and off the wall, like, and like hyper specific and referential.
Yeah.
But that's kind of, and like funny, but that's, I've kind of got my raps to that place too.
Absolutely.
So it's like, I would be like taken from the same well. Like I couldn't write a poem and write like, you know what I mean? I'd be drawing from the same well. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Whereas like, if I think if I made a short story, or I don't want to say reviewed, but like talked about a movie I really liked, I don't think that would be digging from the same well as much. You know what I'm saying?
Right. A little more analytical.
Yeah,
opposed
exactly.
To just these like random observations and the yeah. little details that kind of stick with you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, I love the just your range of like pop culture references throughout the records is very strong, you know. Yeah.
Just, well, Neutral Milk Motel in itself.
Yeah.
That was pretty, that one I got a kick out of people. I once read a Reddit review of a guy being like, I went to the Neutral Milk Motel release party. I thought it would be a cover band.
That's incredible.
He was like, it was still fun, though.
That means you're doing something right with that. Yeah. Yeah, just have those. Are those, like, things that just as much as the raps that, like, kind of come to you, like, pretty quickly or, like, stick with you when you're thinking about, like, maybe an album title or something like the Neutral Milk Hotel on that play?
Yeah, like thinking of the names and titles of albums and like how they look in my head is like a huge part of it. Like if it makes me like laugh or giggle, like it's just like yeah, that's such a big part of like what I do. Or just like weird shit, like The Fish That Saved Portland, like that's a flip on a horrible 70s basketball movie with Julius Erving. Like, I just like doing weird, yeah. And, like, a lot of people have no idea, you know what I mean? They're like, what the hell, dude? Why did you name it this?
Warning. An epidemic of fish fever is sweeping the nation. It is highly contagious. Fortunately, there is no cure. It's the fish that saved Pittsburgh. It's the fish that saved Pittsburgh.
It's the fish.
Fish.
They're all Pisces.
And I just like the like I'm really now I'm really into like naming shit like ska bands. Like I wanted to make like a track, like an album and track titles next, like how a ska band would, but like for my own, but like yeah like I love that part of it, like, and the way it looks when it's written down and like just all that. Yeah, I'm very into. It's all part of it. Yeah. It's all goes through the same. Yeah.
Is it like important for you to have that prior to even really digging into the project, or does it usually come like as you get a few tracks in?
It can happen either or. A lot of the time I have it very pretty early in the process. But yeah, like The Fish That Saved Portland, I think we had the whole album done, and then I just decided to name it that because kind of the album felt kind of psychedelic, and I thought that was kind of like a psychedelic name. But like, yeah, like a lot of the time I have the name before I even get into that. I have the name and what the cover's gonna look like, and even track titles before I even start writing, you know.
Yeah, track titles are just as important as sparking things for you then.
Yeah
And is there like as far as like a vision for a complete record, like what is that process like for you? Like, are you just kind of curating beats with whatever producer you are working with that like seem to make sense for the both of you, or does it kind of come differently with each project?
I always usually try to work with just one producer per project.
Yeah.
Just because all the rap I've liked has been pretty close to that, or like maybe one or two producers on one thing. But also I just feel like it's the only way to get a real vibe. I don't have the resources to get like five different producers in a room and get them all on the same page of what I'm thinking and doing. Yeah. But like if it's just me and one other person, and it's just easy, like you guys start to understand in real time what's happening more. And yeah, like with the beats, it's just again, I'm not like the pickiest beat person, because I'm so, my mind is so into the writing and everything else that, like, I kind of just pick beats that I know will work with what I'm thinking, you know what I mean? So it's like, but a lot of the time, it's easy to make that fit. That's not that's not an issue really. So like, and like, when you work with just one other person, with just one producer, they're invested in it. You know what I mean? Like, you're invested in it. Whether if I got like a bunch of beats from like eight guys, eight people on one project, they're gonna be like, I have one beat on there. It's like, whatever.
Yeah, it's like, almost like this compilation that they're a part of.
And it's like, I'm really big in like cohesiveness. Like, and I think for an album to has a much better chance of being cohesive if it's just one producer, you know what I mean? As opposed to like choosing from whatever, a ton of different beats.
Yeah.
But I'm, it's funny we say that, cause right now I'm working on something that is going to have multiple producers. So, you know, but I guess I'm just trying to switch it up on this one.
Hey, we get to see what that side of milk is like too.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you also like that that style of maybe working with one producer, because you feel like you can really dig into the project like together as a team too?
Yeah, I think I realize like I'm very, you know, motherfuckers get on podcasts and be like, I'm such an introvert, I sit at home and I read philosophy, but like I'm not an introvert. I'm extrovert. Like I'm like a person that's of outside. Like I'm in the mix, and I've been in the mix a long time. But like it's like I like teaming up. I like collaboration. I like feeling like where, you know, I think it maybe comes from hooping too and playing sports. It's just like, I like that aspect of it. Like, we're a team, you know what I mean? Like, and like, let's try to, you know, get the W.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I love how people that like play sports or played sports growing up and like also maybe make music now, I feel like they often maybe have that same mindset, and it like really translates over into that. Like something about team sports and participating in something, like I know you've performed at a Portland Pinecones fest of last year. Actually, I don't know if you remember, but that was the first time I actually met you. I was DJing that night, and I played your tracks.
Alex also. I remember that. Yeah.
But even like some goofy thing like that of like playing on this beer league team every week is like, it has brought that back in me of just like knowing that like, oh, I really do like fiend for this, like this teamwork shit, even if it's not like a serious league.
No, I know. I do too. I definitely do too. And I think like a lot of artists maybe like weren't like maybe like big athletes, you know, back in the day, cause they were doing their art shit. But I have noticed that too, when people that have played sports that do music kind of succeed at music at a higher rate, because I think they understand like delegation also. Like they understand like, oh, I need this person to do this.
Yeah.
So I got to be good to this person. Yeah. And you know what I mean? Not to be shitty like that, but like that's just something I've noticed. Yeah.
They've got that competitive edge in them a little bit too.
Yeah, like exactly.
Wanting to top the thing.
Yeah.
Which I feel like within rap, is like important to kind of like have that as part of the persona, and like wanting to be the best, and you know, it's always talking like you are the best. And
no, it's a big part of it, big trope.
So like when you were I don't know, let's say like high school, like I know you had this gap of when you weren't playing music
or
writing music, but like what when did you like start rapping in front of people, or like
I probably played my first show when I was like 16.
Okay.
Up at Ethos, State of Mind, RIP Misk. They had this group, State of Mind, and Harry Mack, who's like a freestyle savant now guy. He was in that group too.
Really?
Yeah. And they put me on. They put me and my homie Brill Devin on a show we were Load B then, Load B. And that was like a group I was in with him for like high school into like my early 20s. And then I kind of stopped because I just hated certain aspects of stuff. But high school, we played tons of shows right out of high school, playing tons of like house parties and shows around town and in Eugene and stuff like that in Seattle. But yeah, it was a fun time when I look back on it. I don't know how good the music was at all the times, but it was fun, you know? Like, I had a lot of fun on stage. I miss kind of having... Because, you know, when you're making music at that age, it's like everybody's around you kind of like, you know, cheering you hyping on you at up. Every little yeah. step of the way, yeah. you know what I mean? Like, you write a rhyme, make a song, the next day you're with 25 of your homies playing them the song and they're all hyped. Like, I'm not around everybody like that anymore because yeah. I'm older, but I miss that kind of aspect of it. But also, yeah. But, yeah, I played a ton of shows, like, in high, like from, like, 16 to, like, 24. I was doing a lot of shows around town, and yeah.
Did it always feel pretty comfortable from a performance aspect for you? Like, was there any nerves around that at all, or were you always like pretty confident in jumping up on stage and rapping?
Man, I think I get a little nervous, but I never have had like real issues with that.
No, like performance anxiety.
Yeah, like And I think that comes from basketball. Like, whatever, you can figure it out.
You can search the and one videos, you know, of Young Milk out there on the court with some
like
legends.
I've always had, like, been able to play in front of big crowds.
Yeah.
It's never really been an issue for me. I mean, I'm a ham, you know, like, it is what it is. Like, I just, you know, I probably like it more, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, but I, you know, you get nervous. But I don't know, you know, you sip a little something or smoke a little something or do whatever you got to do and you're ready, you know yeah. what I mean? Like, so no, never really got too much like anxiety, stage fright or nothing.
I know you said you like enjoyed the writing from a pretty young age, but like, how do you feel like you like maybe developed yourself as a rapper? Like, were you just always... like along with the writing, were you always practicing in some way, like whether you were freestyling with friends or just like rapping over beats that you found on the internet or things like that?
I was always like in cyphers freestyling, or you know, I was battling a lot of people and that was when I was young too. I was like 15 going around city battling people. I've always, you know, again, like, I don't know how good it was at the time, but at the time I was super confident about it. So like, yeah, I never really had much of a, yeah, it always, I think with shows, it's like, I like rapping, like I like getting on stage and rapping. It's just there's so many like other things that bum me out sometimes
about the shows.
Yeah, whether it's the venue, the sound, how the people are treating me. Like, it's, I never care about how many people are in the crowd, because I've had fun shows where there's been like 25 people.
Yeah.
And I've had shows I've hated that had like 250 people. So it's like, never, that is not the like issue, or like how small or big or prestigious the venue is or whatever like that. Like, that's never been the thing. And then, you know, also I fuck up shit on my own all the time. So it's like it could be something that I'm like, damn, I wasn't on it that night, or like that freestyle wasn't good. That was weird. Or like, so it's just like, it's those type of things. But now I'm like, now when I do shows, I'm just at a place now where like everything just kind of has to make sense for me to want to do the show, I guess.
Yeah, because there's so much about those shows that aren't about the performance, right?
Exactly.
Like,
yeah.
It's all of the little details, and like you're saying, like, you never know how you're going to get treated by the venue person, yeah, or like the staff, or like, yeah, if you know, you put all this energy into promoting the show and then the sound is bad, yeah, or like something along those lines.
And then like when me and Dev, when we were younger in Load B, like we did get treated bad a lot by venues and like staff and like, you know, issues with stuff like that. Maybe some of that was our fault, I don't know, but it seemed like, I don't know, like it'd be like ridiculous. I remember this, I mean, it doesn't matter, but it's just like I think I take some of that with me now, since I've been back, I've been treated pretty well, so I just take some of that stuff from the past, I think, with me now that I don't need to. But yeah, when I will say this, when you have a good show and it's a good show, there's no better feeling.
Yeah,
there's not like writing, nothing, recording. When it's like a really good show and the crowd is into it and it, you know, things line up, there's not a higher high than that.
You think it's also like the aspect of like anything can kind of happen in the live show, and that like you're probably not going to like pin yourself to exactly what's on the record, and you might do like say some shit that you'd never said before that, yeah, like really hits,
or... Exactly, yeah. Well, that's the thing about me. I hate, like, if I, like, I've never been on like a real deal official like 28 date tour or anything like, yeah, that, but I would have to change the setup almost every night in, yeah, some way if I were to do that, just because like I don't want it to ever feel like animatronic. Like, I don't want it to ever feel like we're just going through the motions.
Like, it's too rehearsed.
Yeah, it's too rehearsed. And I think with rap music, but I only can come from it through rap music, is that like there needs to be a certain off the cuffness about it. I think even in the recording, like when I record, I really don't do more than one, two, three takes. Like, yeah, your first take is when you're going to like feel it the most. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, and for me, like when I'm in the studio, like I gotta be having fun. The engineers gotta be having fun. Like, which is usually the producer, like, yeah, who I'm making the song with. So it's like, I don't want them to feel like we're working. Like, you know what I mean?
No one's having fun at take 20. So it's
like, and I usually have the verses pretty down, you know?
Yeah.
So it's not like that hard to like get it, like in the first couple of takes. And when you're doing that and shit's moving and all of a sudden it's 3 hours later and you have 6 joints done, everybody feels pretty good. You, yeah, know, you drink a beer and you like listen back and you're like, oh damn, you know, that's what I want it to be like. I don't like this idea of like going over doing like 100 takes. I think it takes a lot of the magic out of what's happening, in my opinion.
Yeah.
That's how I like to record. Now I know there's people that absolutely would hate me saying that, but that's how I like to do it.
I'm actually always surprised by the people that can do it the opposite way of what you're talking about and like maintain some of that like authentic energy. Cause, yeah, like there's obviously people, like you're saying, people that work like that, but it's
fools that are in love with hearing themselves.
Yeah. It's always surprising to me that you can, I don't know how you recreate that energy of that first take or that second take maybe.
Yeah, and I think just like I want everybody in the room like feeling it. You know what I mean? Like, I'm performing kind of then right there a little bit. Like, it's like I want it, you know, like you're going to laugh at the lines the first take. You're not going to laugh at the lines anymore at the 13th take.
Right. Right.
You know what I mean? Like, I love when I'm recording and I see Televangel like laugh while, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, while, you know, all that's helping me be better, you know, yeah, all that's helping the song. So it's like, it makes it. Yeah.
Yeah. I like the idea though of you doing the 13th take and that producer, just like they're laughing, just slowly fading, and the energy.
Yeah, that's what I wouldn't even do that. I would be like, if I couldn't get the verse out by then, I'd be like, this is not, something is wrong here.
This is over.
Yeah, it's over. Honestly, I probably would, because like, also with rap, I realize like I've recorded in like big, really nice studios, and I've recorded in home setups. 9 times out of 10, the home setup, the take is gonna be better. It's like the demo shit. You ever heard a demo and loved a demo, and then they recut it at like a bigger studio, and you're like, damn, I thought the demo was better.
Absolutely.
like I think with rap, I think because rap is so, you know, we don't got to mic up a drum set. We don't got to, you know what I mean? There's not like, it's a beat.
It's plug and play. That a lot you of the load time. In. Yeah.
I think if you can make it as small as possible, for what I do, for my type of rap, the smaller it is, the better the outcome. The more we can take away, like, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, the better it'll be, the more it'll feel more like hand woven rather than handmade, rather than like whatever, you know? I think that's why I love my favorite MF Doom record is Doomsday. And it's because that thing feels like he just stitched that together that day recording it. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, he just, and that to me is like, my new label will hate this, but that's what I want. That's what I like to hear about rap music. You know what I mean? Something that's so personal and singular. You know what I mean? Like the vision, not personal and as in like, but like, just like, it's such a singular thing that didn't have a million hands in the pot. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
it's just like it was written and now it's on this. I don't know. I don't really. You look at rap records today and like look at the liner notes and there's like 67 writers, 135 producers, 75 samples used. It's just like, I think like, that's sorely misunderstanding what like the essence of rap is, which is just an MC and a breakbeat and a DJ with a breakbeat playing. You know what I mean? To this day, I think the best joints sound like that.
Yeah, it's almost
I'll get off my soapbox. But
no, I hear you, man. I feel like it's almost like rap and punk music are similar in that way, where it's like, it's that raw energy a lot of the time that like has the biggest punch and like has the biggest impact. And it's like, there's something about hearing like a really raw like punk recording where you can feel the DIY spirit in it, like verse like. I also really love pop punk, but often that shit is like very produced and polished and it doesn't like maintain that same spirit.
And I should say, like, I'm the same way. Like, I let, you know, Chronic 2001 is like an album that's like always stuck with me, and that shit is super dialed in and polished. But so you're right. But like, I guess from what I do, from what I'm best at, it works more in the other way than that way. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Man, I gotta say, for some reason, I was inspired to listen to the Chronic 2001 the other day, and I was really disappointed with. I guess I'm just like, as I get older, realizing that like how my least favorite parts of those records is when Dre is rapping.
Yeah, it's bad.
Yeah.
Also, like,
I used to love that record, Milk.
Yeah. I mean, I think I like it because of like, I think I have like rose tinted. But, Dre's rapping is terrible. Also, sometimes, like, skits back then are just, like, out of control. Like, having sex skits, like, man, that's one thing the streaming era works in the favor. there's no more weird sex skits in a rap record to try to listen to. You're listening to, like, Big Pun, and all of a sudden you hear, like, a train getting ran by Fat Joe and Big Pun on your fucking in between track 8 and track 9. You're like, gee, I did not need this like at the moment. Now I have a visual of some big gorgeous men going at it. But absolutely. Anyway, yeah. But no, I feel you. Chronic 2001. I haven't listened to it in a very long time. I just hear that one song all the time. Still Dre. The
ling, ling, oh ling. Yeah. I mean, that shit still like hits for me. But I was like, hearing that song the other day like made me want to listen to that record, and I just found myself skipping a lot and just like really paying attention to Dre's raps and realizing that they're not great.
No.
And that they're the moments I appreciate the least on the record. And it's mostly, but then I have to give it up for his beat making, obviously, you know?
Yeah.
A lot of that shit is like very iconic to me still, but
I feel you.
Sometimes you revisit those records that had such a big impact and then they just like don't hold the same weight, and it's disappointing.
It's true. Also, like 1999 is I think when that came out, and like I think like the palette of music was just really bad on a mainstream level during that time.
It's an interesting time.
I think it's like really. People are really confused not like where to where to take it next. Not maybe Dre, but just the zeitgeist of music was bad, you know.
Yeah,
I don't need to bring up 99 Woodstock or anything. but like, yeah, I just think it was like, yeah.
Talk to me about like how you feel like you're Portland born and raised.
Yeah.
How do you feel like this city
was born right up on Greeley?
Okay,
where the Adidas thing used to be a hospital.
How do you feel like this growing up here has informed your style as a rapper and as an artist?
Well, yeah, like, I mean, if you listen to me, I'm talking about I'm very Portland-centric. I can't not be. I mean, like, it's just, like, if I'm talking about what's going on, I have to be, I'm here. This is what's happening. Like, I take tremendous pride, I think, for some weird reason, just stupid rep your city shit, Portland rap it, you're always supposed to, like, rep where you're from hard. I think I took that. I think I was born in a neighborhood at a time that was interesting. There was a lot going on, and, like, yeah, like, it... I reference something about Portland every, like, I'm about to go to New York to go record. I'm going to be saying the most Portland centric bullshit that only people from Portland, maybe in a certain time or place, will understand what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, that shit is just forever, like, in me. Like, I am of Portland. Like, and not only I'm from Portland, like, I'm like, I was, but like, I could go to the top of my roof and see the Moda Center type of Portland. You know what I mean? Like, I'm in this, like, very inner city, central Portland. You know what I'm saying? So it's like where I grew up. And like, you know, like, yeah, like, all, like, you know, as everybody says in Portland, after the 80s and 90s, there's a bunch of gentrification. And that shit's weak, but like, I still take tremendous pride about like where I grew up, and yeah, it'll always be in my rhymes. Like, all that will forever. Portland will always be, like, I hate Portland, but I love Portland, and like you know, I always talk about leaving, but I never leave. Like, my family's here. Like, everybody's here. You know what I'm saying? So it's just like. And, you know, people are always on my line, like, oh, you got to get out of Portland, like, oop-de-whoop, you know. And it's like, yeah, but, like, I don't really want to have to go to, like, New York or L.A., like, to live there to do this. You know what I'm saying? Like, what's the point of that? Like, I want to be here the whole, like.
Yeah.
I can go on a plane and go somewhere.
Yeah.
But, like, I'm never going to, this will always be, like, home base, like, no matter what.
Yeah, I just think that I mean, I think there's definitely benefits to maybe being in bigger markets, like, day to day, and maybe the interactions that you get to have with people. But I just think that we're also, like, maybe beyond the point of needing to be in a city 100% to advance your career as an artist, you know, with the internet and, like, being able to, you can go spend a week in New York if you want to go spend a week in New York. But
yeah.
I have claimed this to be my home for the last 11 years. So, like, I have a lot of pride and go hard for this city. So I think, like, I get that additional, like, love for your lyrics when I get to hear things about the Hot Cake House and, like, all these little spots. But
yeah.
I also think that those are, like, some of my favorite aspects of music across the board lyrically, like, whatever genre it is. When people point out little corner stores and things that I have no reference for. So, like, I feel like in your delivery, it's gotta, maybe they don't have the pinpoint reference for these places that they haven't been if they don't live in this city.
Yeah.
but it feels good still. I think it paints a picture. I think that you do like a really good job of painting a picture, you know, through the lyrics.
Definitely.
So I always appreciate that listening and then, yeah, getting the extra love for like understanding like these reference points.
I got to say something. I was just read an article about somebody talking about Elliott Smith, talking about in one of his songs, Walking Around Alameda. And this motherfucker thought he was talking about Los Angeles. And I wanted to fucking break some shit. I was like, you bitch, he's talking. I was so fucking mad. I was fucking livid. I was ready to call people. I was like ready to like, the article was so long ago, but I wanted to email somebody that worked there and be like, you know, this is a, anyway, sorry.
That's amazing. I think like one of the things that I appreciate about like maybe rap as an art form, like rappers working with different producers and jumping around is that it's almost like you're playing with a different band every time when you're making a record. Yeah, what do you feel like maybe different producers bring out of you that others don't, and like the importance of like switching it up from different records with different producers?
Yeah, I mean, well, first of all, it's more fun because it's like, yeah, like if you're working in the same palette every time, it won't. I mean, that's tight too. I mean, it's all, but I think it's just, you know, new energy, new sounds, new way, new ideas can come across because of new sounds. Like, you know, maybe like me and Calvi's record, Tiger Milk, that's a little more goofy and fun. You know what I'm saying? Maybe another producer, I don't want to say goofy, that was rough, but yeah, sure, goofy, I don't care, fuck it. Yeah, it's a little goofy, it's a little fun, it's a little more like of a good time, less serious. We're not trying to drag anybody down. But maybe on another record, I get real depressing. Maybe another producer gives me shit where I can be like, okay, now let me be sad for a second.
Is that, do you think that's just the beat itself, like speaking to you in that
sort
of way?
Yeah. I always take what the beat gives me. You know what I mean? Like, I'm very, what the fuck is that thing where you get the senses tied up?
Oh, the it's not the synesthesia.
Is it like hearing things or seeing things in color? But whatever that shit is, where I hear sound or see sounds or whatever that type of shit is, I have that like very viscerally. So like with beats, if I just close my eyes, look. I don't think I actually close my eyes. Maybe I do, but
dramatization, Milk closes his eyes. He sees a color,
and I see Disneyland. but the beat really like gives me the vibe. You know what I'm saying? Like, and I can get a whole vibe from a beat. Like, I'll start thinking about places that I've been and things that I've. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's like, yeah, definitely.
There's been quite a bit of work done with Televangel of late. What about that relationship works so well for you?
Well, he lives in Portland, and he's easily accessible.
Okay.
He's really dope because he'll just, like, have a beat that's, like, he's working on. I'll rap to it, and then he just, like, does all this crazy shit to the beat after I'm done rapping to it. You know what I mean? Like, adds all these layers and textures that sound really cool.
Does it often, like, almost sound like a demo then? What you were talking about? Like, is that kind of what you get when you're recording your raps on things and then it, like, turns into something
a little
different when you're done?
Yeah. Like, with him, like, the beats are, like, complete. But also, I just trust him to make dope shit all the time, so I just don't care. I'm like, whatever. Like, whatever he'll do, I'm gonna fuck with. So it's, like, I'm not tripping. And, like, also with me, I should say, I never listen to my demos. I don't even get them emailed to me. I, like, rarely ask for them to get emailed to me. I don't listen to it. But he it's always something different and it sounds crazy. I also just love how he mixes me, it pisses some people off, but I love how, like, in the mix I am, like, in the music. I'm not, yeah. like, so high above, compressed on top of the beat.
No,
like,
you're
I'm right
in it.
I'm right there in it. And I think for a rapper like me, a lot of rappers that, like, rap like me always want their shit, like, a radio freestyle sounding, you know what I mean? Where they're just screaming on top of the fucking beat. So it's very cool to work with him, so I can, like how I say I'm more of a writer than a musician, this makes me think more musically when I work with him. I just like how it all is. And so we got that all down, and it's just super comfortable and easy to record with him. And yeah, it's just fun. I love recording with him. We got the beer fridge. That's all I need.
Is it difficult for you, or more difficult for you, to record something if you're not actually in the room with the producer? Like, say you're like doing something a little more remotely. Like, I know that a lot of this sparked for you getting back into music, like, during the pandemic. So you must have been like,
yeah, how did
just
this...
sending raps over email and things
yeah.
like that.
And I hated that, but that's what had to happen. It's harder to work. Yeah, it's harder for me. I really would rather have the producer be there, just because everybody's gonna be on the same page right away. There doesn't need to be communication, like yeah. a ton of emails back and forth and shit like that. You know,
you don't
what
have
saying?
To like throw your raps down and then someone and, like, be like, "I'm not really feeling that."
Yeah, me and my homie Trox have been trying to make this record since 2020. Well, probably 2021. And we just can't do it because we're not in the same place. You know, I know once we get into the same place, like, we'll knock it out yeah. in, like, no time. But, like, I would way 100% rather have the producer there. Again, with that being said, I'm about to record a project, but that's not going to happen at all. So.
Well, I'm sure that's good, too, yeah. like, for you to, like, have that experience and, like, have to work under those conditions yeah. as well, just to, like... to show that you can operate in that way, if not for yeah. like other people, but for yourself.
Yeah. But yeah, definitely, like, in the pandemic, like, yeah, I started, like, kind of almost like right when the pandemic started, I started doing music again. And like, yeah, it was weird. Like, but it was also kind of fun. I had a ton of fun. Those are all those projects. Almost all of them are no longer on streaming or anything, but
you've been known to take some things down.
Well, no, actually, it was an accident. But my first four, I did like four little EPs in 2020.
Okay,
and they were on some DistroKid account that I cannot get into, so I haven't been able to repay it to get it to keep them on to the thing, keep them on the streaming services because I didn't pay whatever.
Okay.
But
DistroKid sponsors the show, Milk. I don't know if you know that, but I'll get at them. DistroKid, we need to figure this shit out. But, get my guy Milk's other records up on his streaming.
But I think I'm going to do something with all those. Well, it also should be said, those poor projects, the only people that listen to them are like 20 of my friends. Like, literally.
That's amazing.
But shout out to the homies, and yeah. like, shout out to everybody that gave me beats when, like, nobody listened to me. Like, that was very nice of everybody. Shout out Ton, Stuart, or Solomon, blank blank blank, Bryce Lang, Law Spoken, all you fools, thank you for giving me beats when I was a nobody. I love y'all forever for that. And I'm going to figure it out. I want to do like a culmination of those or okay. something. Like,
just pick your favorites.
Yeah, like put them on a vinyl. I want it to be like a bigger thing than when it released. Because it's kind of unfair to them, because it's like they deserve some of this new little bit of tiny bit of thing I got going on now. Like I have more listeners now, more people yeah. watching me now. I just feel like I need to get them... those eyes too, you know what I'm saying? Like,
let's call that compilation DistroKid.
Yeah, but I'll figure it out. But yeah,
curious to like how important you think that gap was of you not making music to maybe contributing to your level of output these last few years.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, so I stopped making music probably 2015 to 2020. Like, I would go sometimes and do some, like, random shit, but, like, it wasn't, there was no, like, project or no real anything. I was just kind of being a baby because I put it like because just nothing happened with my group. Like I was just kind of just being like, oh fuck music, you know, like I, you know, just being a 24-year-old idiot, and then thinking that I was the greatest and nobody was paying attention, but yeah. That annoying ass shit that nobody gives a fuck about. No, I should say this: nobody gives a shit. Like to any fellow younger musician or rapper out there, nobody's supposed to care or like your music. So be thankful every time that
it's a bad reason to do it.
Yeah, and you gotta have inner validation. Like you gotta have it in you. Like you can't. You gotta the idea of just making the music has to be the best thing.
Yeah.
Or else it's like, yeah, what the fuck are we doing? So, but yeah. So I was just mad at the world. I hated the Portland scene. I was just an angry Ute, as they say. And I needed those years for sure, because you know. I did a lot of growing up in those years too. Like a lot of shit had happened, a lot of craziness, a lot of, you know, I worked my first and only one real job during that time. Went through relationships, went through, you know, lost people, you know, all types of shit, you know what I mean? And it kind of, And I was still rap, like I still have rhymes from that time in my head that I haven't recorded yet. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like I have a back. That's why I was able to just go crazy. Like I had an extreme, I had a back catalog of a half of a decade. Like that, like I didn't really do anything with or put anything out, and like it was like a formative time in my life too. Like it was tons of shit was going on and like, you know what I'm saying? So it's just like, I think like before I was making music, my frontal lobe hadn't even developed all the way. You know what I'm saying? And the way I write and the way I make music, I think is like kind of similar to like a comedian, where I don't think comedians really get good till they get like 35, 40 years old. Mm-hmm. 'Cause they had to have gone through life and had experiences to talk about.
Right.
Like I was saying earlier, and the way I am, I'm kind of similar to that. Like I'm not here to like give you like a crazy melody or anything like that. Or like, you know, what I'm saying has to be what you're interested in. If you're listening to my music, it has to be like the words that I'm saying and the thoughts and ideas and everything. And like, I just, you know, another thing is like, I was, when I was younger, I was just like following shit. Like, you know what I mean? Like I was just,
as you do, yeah, as a younger person,
like I was just trying to sound like, oh, let me make a record that sounds like this record. And we did a pretty good job at like copying other people's records. Like we were able to do it pretty good, but like I didn't develop what I am. Like I've definitely like developed what I am now. I needed those years to like get my own shit where I'm not like just fucking like, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. Like my own voice type shit. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. You put on a Milk record now and you know, it's,
yeah,
you know,
exactly.
It's your authentic
voice.
You've had the time to carve it out. And I think that's the nice thing, like bouncing around your discography these last few years, is that like, whether it's different producers, it feels like
it's like my
Your
Malou.
Vision and your voice.
Yeah.
And, you know, it doesn't feel like you're, when I listen to these records, it doesn't feel like to me that you're trying to copy someone. And I think that is so much of like the learning process as like a younger artist, or like early on, is that you're mimicking these people that have inspired you to a degree where it can feel like you're just like ripping it off, or like, you know, thinking about even early podcast conversations for me, you know, it was all heavily inspired by the people that hosted these types of conversations. And then it slowly becomes your own voice as you get your reps in on it.
Exactly. And you just get comfortable and you're just more yourself. The older you get, kind of, you're just more yourself. Like you're less worried about other shit. You just know what you like. You like what you like and you just do it. But hip hop has such like a, like a youth fascination. Well, at least it used to. I think we're kind of getting away from that a little bit, but it used to just be like the fact that I have any like people in the industry hitting me up now just cracks me up, because I'm like, damn, I'm like old as fuck. Like, like where were y'all when I was like 23? Like, but it all happens how it's supposed to happen, as they say, or whatever, you know? So,
yeah. When you mentioned that, having to have that like self-validation, can you think to like any pivotal moments for you, or like when it like kicked in for you, having that self-validation instead of chasing it maybe in other places?
I think I'm still working on it for sure. It's like always a work in progress, but I think during the pandemic, things got so quiet, you know, you're able to think a little bit, like if you weren't worried about the world falling apart the other 5 seconds, the other little bit of time you can kind of think about reflection and what you could probably work on to like, I remember my mom telling me very early in the pandemic, being like, this is a good time to like get yourself to a place you want to be, or get yourself at least in the direction of where you want to be while things are stopping. You know what I'm saying? So it's kind of like, you know, we got the clock to sit still. You know what I mean? Like, we got time to like do stuff and think stuff and realize stuff about what you want to do and who you want to be and how you want to do it. And wait, what the fuck was the question? I'm sorry.
You spoke about that gaining your own self-validation.
Yeah, self-validation. Rather than like, and I think, and I think I really had to realize, like, okay, like, I had it in me, I always want to make music. Why do I want to make music? And I really, it's all for my, like, it's got to come from me. It's like, it's got to be a self-fulfilling thing. Like, it's got to be, it can't. All the outside shit is just outside shit. First and foremost, I want to make music because I fucking have to make music or I won't be okay. I should say, this 5-year period of time that I wasn't making music was very fucking dark for me.
It was
a
little reckless, huh? Yeah.
It was fucked up. I was not in a good place. Like, anybody could see that. Like, you know what I mean? So it's like, I have to do this shit. Now, like, I don't, bro, I used to have like crazy fucked up, like vivid ass nightmares during that 5-year time, and then when I started making music again, them shits has completely gone out the window. Like, I have less anxiety, I'm less like all this shit, and I think I just gotta remind myself that, like, dude, you have to do this shit. like it's like the only way you can respond to the world and feel okay. Yeah. Like, get, you know what, fucking, I used to fucking hate waking up every day. Now I'm like excited. You know what I mean? Like, I'm fucking lucky as hell. Like, the people, whatever, small or big, people are paying attention to what I'm doing. You know what I mean? And that's so, I'm old enough to know how that does not happen to people. You know what I mean? Like, I am getting outside validation now. And it's like, I'm thankful for that shit, because I know how that does not come often. Like, people make tons of music and don't hear anything ever. You know what I'm saying? And really good people too. I know people that are amazing at what they do, but just haven't, whatever, for whatever reason, it hasn't, you know, we all know people, but like, yeah, it's, I'm still working on like being completely like zen about it. I don't think I'll ever get there.
It's a constant battle.
Yeah, but like, I try to always remind myself that, like, man, you'd be doing this if nobody was looking, and you have done it when nobody was looking, and you know you feel better even if nobody's looking and you're doing it. So it's like, you know, it, and you know, it does feel good, you know, to like, you know, see fans, or like, I don't like saying fan, but people that fuck with, supporters that fuck with your music and shit like that, and like people like commenting and DMing you, and labels and managers and blah, 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 hitting you up. That shit does feel good, but yeah. Nothing feels as good as me just like having an ill day, fucked up day, and then writing a rap and feeling better. That's the bet. That's the shit. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, man.
You got to feel like that is, that's the best shit. You know what I mean? Like, all that other shit is just icing on the cake. But, like, that is, like, that's what matters most, you know, for me, you know. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's, like, when it's special, too, when you recognize that, like, you'd be doing this even if no one was listening, and like when you recognize like what a positive impact it has on like your day-to-day life.
Yeah.
Do you have any idea like what you feel like like why it grounds you in that way, or just like the ability to get things off your chest, I guess, like, and freeing yourself of those nightmares things like that?
I think it's part of it. Like, I mean, a lot of my raps, like, are deceptively pretty dark. Like, sometimes I'll say some super foul shit. I think because I say so many, it's so, like, deadpan sometimes. I think it goes over, not over people's heads, but they're not really, like, thinking about the line I just said. Like, they're more maybe thinking about how it sounds or what it's rhyming with. But, yeah, man, like, getting that foul shit off of you, I think, is a thing. Like getting, you know... For me, it's just like punching a boxing bag sometimes. Like, even if I'm not saying particularly dark shit, but I'm just like rhyming really hard, like going hard or whatever, barring out, like that shit is like hitting the speed bag or like the heavy bag for me. Like, I'm getting like aggression out and like pain out and hurt out on this beat. You know what I'm saying? Like, not to be so melodramatic about the shit, but it's true. And I think that's just part of it, you know? Like, I think it does, it just ground, it just, yeah, it just really does ground, makes me a better listener, a better, like, I listen to people more because of that. Like, I'm able to have a little more clear head after I write, you know what I'm saying? It's like, it's just, it's, like, writing, I think, definitely makes me a better person, for sure, without question. Yeah.
Do you feel like you notice even more now that you're like deep into this process and like you're putting stuff out regularly? Like, if you go a few days or like go a week without like doing much creating, that you can like feel it kind of creeping back the other way?
Yeah, I really do. I mean, even luckily I'm at a place now where like things are happening music wise where there's some opportunities financially and shit like that where I can get a little bit of money, you know what I'm saying? But like, you know, when you have to do other, you know, everybody's got to like figure out how to figure it out, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. So like that takes a lot of time out of your other shit, you know, out of your creative time. And it's like the whole goal of me doing the a bit not the whole goal a big A big part of me doing this is like trying to make this shit my day job, which is in itself an insane and like crazy, like like I realize how irrational and insane that sounds to some people, but it's like, but yeah, like that's the reason why I want to make this my day job, is so like it can, you know, it's the only thing I have to worry about.
Yeah.
And like yeah, yeah.
Oh, that makes sense. It's it seems like you're in a good place with it then.
Yeah.
You know, and like I said, I'm just...
Yeah, you caught me on a good week. We could have had this thing. We could have done this podcast a couple of weeks ago. That's another thing about this shit. It's still bipolar with the career thing about it all.
What do you just mean like your self-worth with it? Like where the career is at or like... the ways that you're maybe gauging success at this point?
Yeah, I think, well, anybody that goes into this shit is a little delusional. You kind of gotta be. but just like where my mind is at the time, it can be totally a self thing, you know, where I like have talked myself out of it or like, but you know, when things are looking up with the music shit, I gotta say, I get it. It feels good.
Yeah.
Like when you get good news, your phone, you know, your phone is, people are hitting you up every day about stuff, and you have stuff to do, and you got a little bit of money in your pocket from doing it. Like, yeah. things are smooth. My life feels definitely smoother.
Yeah, but for like, sure, man.
But then you like have something happens or whatever, and you have like a bad week. With this shit, you can feel an inch away or a mile away.
Absolutely.
So it's like, you know, yeah, it's still a very up and down thing with me about the career aspect of it. The creative aspect of it, you know, I always feel good about it. You know, honestly, I really do. Like, I love recording, writing. I love thinking of new things. You know what I'm saying? So, but the other aspect, you know, like the ambition and all that bullshit is like, yeah, that can be very up or down for me some days.
Yeah. I mean, it feels like, I don't know, just seeing your output, it seems like it's happened because you love this shit and
yeah.
it's in you
yeah.
and you want to get it out, and not like this thing where you feel like, oh, I have to put another record out to follow up this. This is like, nah, this is just like,
yeah,
where I'm at with it. Just putting a lot of stuff out, and it, like, I think having that good news from time to time is really important to like keeping you going. Even if,
yeah.
you know, like you were talking about, the self-validation is obviously very important aspect of it as well, but every once in a while you need a win to keep you going and to outweigh some of the losses. And like, you don't get, you know,
yeah,
it seems to me like you're working pretty hard for it, man.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, I definitely am, man. I and you know, that might even sound bad to some people, but it's true. I'm working very hard.
But like, that's a big aspect of it. Yeah, man. I think that's like, you know, you got to work hard at this to like make it sustainable in some way for
yeah,
yourself.
I think so too. I think that's what separates a lot of people. It's like how hard they're willing to work. And just like, it's not working hard to me because this shit is so easy. I mean, it's just so like there's just nothing else I should be doing.
Yeah, for sure.
Other than this. But like, yeah, I mean, my bro, I have a homie who's like in another field, but like kind of started during pandemic as well. And just like watching him like kind of maneuver through what he's maneuvering through and me through mine, it's just kind of funny how that all can work. But yeah, like just being in any creative field and trying to get a dollar out of it is just such a funny, it's just quite a ride.
Yeah, for sure. And whether this shit comes easy to you or not, as far yeah. as like the writing and whatnot, it's yeah. still, you're still carving out the time to create and get in the studio and you know,
yeah.
putting in the work in that way.
Yeah. And then lately, you know, everybody's been making me do these visuals. Like, I hate that shit, but I go and do it because it's how the music industry works now.
It's like what we're talking about.
Yeah.
You know, me going to filming these podcasts and
yeah,
shit, too.
Yeah.
It's like, people want to see your dumb face
yeah.
talking.
They want to see your lyrics at the bottom of the screen.
Yeah.
Which is what I really, that takes away so much of the reason why. I mean, I don't know how I feel about this whole thing. But anyway, yeah, like, it's just crazy, like, trying to, like, keep yourself being you and what you would want to do and want to do. But and the other half of you, you know, wants to, like, move forward. And it's like, I'm constantly doing this, like, check-in, like, is this, like, something you want to do? Like, is this okay for you? Like,
yeah.
But then the other half of me is like, but we want this to work for us at some point. Like, maybe we should like not compromise, but do something different this time to see how it works type shit. You know what I mean? Like, but you know, also, like, I should say, like, I make the most dusty, underground-ass rap music, I think, in the world. So, I'm not out here trying to proclaim I'm trying to be Drake or anything. I'm just trying to, you know, blue-collar it, you know?
Well, I think you're doing a fine job of it, Milk.
Thank you.
I appreciate your music very much.
Thank you.
And like I said, just impressive how much you've put out. And I'll definitely make sure the links are in the episode notes so people can keep up with you.
Dope.
Get yourself a Milk vinyl. There's a couple of those that have come out.
Yeah, they're all gone.
Are they all gone?
Yeah, I tried to get one the other day and couldn't get my hands on it.
All right, well, even I missed the boat on that, but I'll be looking for the represses of the Neutral Milk Motel and the Fish That Saved Portland.
We got to do another run. We got to do another run soon. But yeah.
I want to play the episode out with your most recent track, which is Just One More Time, which I know is a pretty personal one about a friend who just passed.
Yeah.
Can you talk to me about that track or whatever you're comfortable with sharing just the way maybe how helpful that's been to kind of process that? I know it's very fresh wounds, but just like how that's been.
Yeah, no problem. It's about my homie, Mighty Misk, who also was in the Portland rap scene. Like I said, he was in a group with Harry Mack called State of Mind, and then he did a bunch of solo stuff, and he passed recently, three weeks ago from today. Like I was kind of been talking about all episode, like I just needed to get it off me type. Like I got the beat from Televangel. I wrote to it like 2 days after he passed, and I recorded it after going to his funeral. Very drunk. I drank a pint of Hennessy. Alex gave me a pint of Hennessy. Shout out my boy, Dusty Fox. He had some sips too. I can't say I killed the whole thing. And you know, Mighty Misk with Misk, Alon Eichler, big part of you know what I did and who I big part of me rapping. But even more than that, he was just, you know, I known him my whole life. Like grew up around me. Just a big loss, you know. You know, when you lose people young, it's just ugly. Like,
yeah,
it's never, you know, going to an older person's funeral. Like, you know, it's sad, but it's like, you know, that's life. But when it's cut short, it's just a certain ugliness to it all, you know.
Absolutely.
But I'll just say this. Like, I want to say this. Mental health is just like any other sickness, man. I think we have a real fucked up way of looking at certain things in our society about that. As far like if somebody dies of cancer, to me it's the same thing. Somebody's dying of mental health. Like, it's like, you know, they're in tremendous amounts of pain. I think we gotta kind of readjust sometimes about how we look at things. Like, you know, hearing people say like, oh, I'm so mad at this person, I have a hard time with that personally. But
absolutely.
Anyway, shout out to my bro Misk, rest in peace, baby. I wrote this song. I hope it doesn't bum people out too much. But
I think it's beautiful, dude. I never had the pleasure of meeting Alon, but I like have seen this outpour from the community. I'm very good friends with Dusty Fox, and you know, just to see my friends in pain losing a friend, you know, I know how that feels, and I've gotten to know his dad, Dan.
Yeah, great guy.
Just a great dude, and it has just been there to, you know, support a lot of local music over years, and I've known him for so long. So when I heard about that, I was just like immediately heartbroken, not just for like my friends that have been impacted or knew him, but just for his dad and his family and whatnot. Yeah. So I think it's this is a beautiful tribute, man.
Thank you,
track, and also just music is beautiful in a way where when you've been doing it for a long time and you kind of document your life maybe through this way is like you get mentions of him like in Blue Faces, you
know?
So like there's these things that like exist throughout your catalog of music, and then to pay tribute this way is a very cool thing, man.
Yeah, thank you, bro. I really appreciate that. And Yeah, rest in peace, Misk.
Yeah, man, I appreciate you. I'm glad we got to do this.
You've
been someone I've been wanting to have on the show for a long time, and I'm glad that we
got to
do it today.
You got a dope-ass space, man. I like this shit.
Appreciate it.
It was fun. It was easy.
It's a pleasure to get to host people like yourself in this room, and can't encourage people enough to go check out all the music that you've got up there. Once again, I'll put the links in the episode notes so you can keep up with Milk and everything he's got going on. Yeah. We're going to play it out with that Just One More Time track. Wait. And Milk, we end every episode of the podcast with the guest saying the tagline for the show, which is, it's a program. It means absolutely nothing. It's just the way that my grandfather says the word program. He says program.
Is he from the Kentucky?
No, man. He's just from, like, he's from California. It makes no sense to me. It seems to be just like this generational thing.
Okay.
But it's the one time I will ask you to look at the camera.
Okay.
And you can deliver this, it's a program, however you would like to, and we'll sail it out that way.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's a program.
He nailed it, everybody. That's Milk. Check out the music. Playing it out with Just One More Time, that most recent single, and that's the Jelly Jams, and we will catch you on the flip side, Portland or wherever you are listening from. Cool, man.
Hell yeah.
All right, boy. I wanna unload a clip in the sky, but won't bring bro back. Shit, I can't hold back. Wish I could go back to when you lit on 13th. We was like 13, smoking on some dirt weed. Jack's attic trying to teach me how to count bars. You and Mac rocking shows, y'all felt like stars. Put me on one, we're brilling up at Ethos. I threw up on Williams, being kicked out. You let me live with you, gives you better judgment. Drinking, drugging, and thugging. Little fella, big heart, this one tough to make. Remember, you gave me 400 to go record my tape. Selfies, help others before you help yourself. When I was down, shit. Wish I could go back to that pass over half sober. Life was crazy back then, we laugh over. Let me freestyle with Miss just one more time. Let me hear one more self-deprecating rhyme. Listening to these songs like going back in time. Pull my brew out for the mighty just one more time. Let me freestyle with Miss just one more time. Let me hear one more self-deprecating.